From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episodes 9 through 13. So we have a lot to catch up on this week. The gang is all here, and Bob, Janet, and I are going to discuss it all. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping, Bob?
Nope, no housekeeping this week. I know as far as our other cases, the big housekeeping I want to keep giving you guys is what's going on with West Memphis 3? And people keep asking about it, and there's nothing. That's the biggest update we're waiting on right now. Or also, I really think that there's probably going to be some movement on Jesse's case, I'm hoping, here sometime soon. But as of right now, nothing's going on. We're just plugging away. I think what I was about to say is going to be a question. So we only got a couple of those. We'll just move on. Guys, we had 5 episodes since we've been together last. 4 of them were repeat episodes from several years ago for those people who listen to True Crime Binge. And then the one new one on Sunday this week, we heard from the Exoneration Justice Project. Hopefully I got that right, from the University of Notre Dame. Exoneration Justice Clinic. I was close.
Yes.
So we got a lot to talk about. So first of all, you guys were gone last week. So it's been a little bit. So we'll just kind of catch up. I know we don't have a lot of questions. So start with Janet. Take it away, Janet.
Well, what do you want to talk about? You want to catch up, or you want to talk about all the cool episodes that you released, some of which were episodes that I'm sure some True Crime Binge listeners had listened to and enjoyed, but it's been a minute. I definitely listened to everything, even though I was a listener of that podcast as well. And we do have a really nice comment from someone, Ashley. I'm just going to jump right into that real quick and say, Ashley said, I really liked revisiting the True Crime Binge episodes highlighting women in the space for Women's History Month. And so that worked out.
Yeah, I thought it was and it was, as you guys know, I don't know how much I talked. I think I talked a little bit about the introduction, but there was the 2 episode drop on Friday instead of the follow-up was a last minute panic. Zach had a injured child, had to go to the doctor. Janet had only told me that she wouldn't be there 3 weeks prior to that. So there's no way that I could have possibly known that was happening.
Sure.
But so it was kind of last minute. But, I was thinking back, like, who were some awesome and the interesting thing, I think I did mention this in the intro, is so I was like, let me go back. Like, it's Women's History Month. We've highlighted some incredible women creators in space. Let me go back and pull some people, some other episodes, so that anybody that didn't listen to True Crime Binge can have them again. And so I went and grabbed Megan and Amy's episodes and put them out on Friday. Weirdly enough, so I went through all the process and published them on Thursday, having them ready to go for Friday, or had them all ready to go other than the intro. And then Amy, Dr. Schlossberg, sent me an email and she's like, hey, we've got this new project coming up and, if you want to do like a swap or something, I was like, hey, why don't I have you guys come on and we'll talk about everything you've done in the last 6 years and what you're up to. So it was such a weird thing. I haven't talked to either Amy or Megan in, I don't know, a few years.
Yeah.
And it was like, they had no idea that I was doing this and they just happened to reach out. So we're gonna have them coming up pretty soon.
That's awesome.
Well, their episode, actually Amy's episode specifically, because you guys talked a little bit about Sandy Melgar's case, then prompted me to go back and listen to their coverage on the episode. Yeah. And in doing so, I discovered that they had in turn had recently re-released their episode from several years ago about Sandy Melgar. They released that again with a little update tag at the end in January of this year. So, and I'm sorry to say, but every time we do anything that has to do with Sandy, all of us just get so upset and it really turns on our righteous indignation. And it's hard to listen to an update from the docs, which is what we also know. Well, that set of docs that we also know, which is like, it's so fantastic that the Texas Innocence Project is involved. It's great that there's a big reward out there, but Sandy is still in prison. So it's just really tough to talk about that case.
Well, this isn't any episode specific, but I had this thought today about like the idea that 20 years ago, like wrongful convictions weren't a thing, not because they didn't exist and not because they weren't happening,
mm-hmm.
but there was nobody highlighting them. There was no, you know, it just wasn't in
Not nearly in the volume that they're being highlighted.
Correct,
now.
Correct. And it's just crazy to think because, like I said, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they still existed. They still happened, but it just wasn't in people's conscious. And now, like, my 11-year-old knows that wrongful convictions happen.
Yeah.
Knows the term wrongful conviction. It's just, like, in everyday life now. It's good that the work has evolved into this and you know, putting the presence out there for that everybody knows about it. But it's just crazy that it's really been a short period of time that all this has come to the forefront.
It's interesting for me because, you know, going through the criminal justice program right now at Purdue that I'm in my final class for. And this one's like a traditional class where I have like Zoom seminars. And I had my first one on Sunday and let's, you know, we all had to like introduce ourselves and talk about what we do. And it was interesting, the kind of feedback that I got from all these people that are all in training to be either our cops or in training to be cops or the instructor who's a cop, you know, like the instructor was like, oh, you're on the dark side, huh? You're doing defense investigation. Like how much they, as soon as I mentioned, and that was before I mentioned wrongful convictions. I just mentioned, you know, that I do defense investigation work was what I was pursuing the degree for. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, yeah, I primarily in my investigative journalism work, you know, on the podcast over the last 10 years, I work on wrongful conviction cases. And you could tell, like, the instructor's like, oh, that's great. But you could tell like, oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't say that, but it was, it's funny because to see it from that other perspective, how like what you're talking about, like how like everybody knows about it now. And then as the conversation went on, you know, when he's talking about like one of the units we're going to cover is, you know, how things are affected by the media and this and that. And it's just so interesting because like from their perspective, it's like, you know, the media exposing all this stuff is like, you know, bad for, and these aren't like, hopefully not like corrupt cops, but they're just like, oh, everything we do is being nitpicked and they're, you know, our body cams are going up all over the place and all this stuff. And they never tell the real story and da, 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 da. And I'm just like, huh. Or maybe they are telling the real story. Maybe be more careful about what you're doing.
It was just crazy to me to think about the idea that growing up, you know, you always assumed that if they were convicted, they got it right.
Mm-hmm.
They got the right guy. They got it right. And to know now that that's not the case, it's not always the case, I guess. You know, I mean, it's crazy to think that it's so much more.
Well, it's just that like the general public didn't question convictions.
Correct.
Until now. And it's like, I actually went to the P.O. box today, by the way.
Yeah.
Congratulations to me.
And stale, like, cookies and
no, but there was a stack of jail mail and like people are sending, like we get it all the time, like people from prison that are like sending, like, please look at my case, please look at my case. Like there's just so many of them.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the things we talk about a lot on this podcast is trying to keep an open mind and trying to look at the perspective that someone else might have that's different. And I know a lot of people in this space who they no longer have any room at all for good cops. Like they will make a statement, a broad statement that they will look me square in the eye and say, there is no such thing. There are no good cops, period, dead stop. I don't trust any cops. They are all crooked. They are all bad. They're all sadists. And I don't agree with that. I think it's dangerous to be swayed in that way. I don't feel comfortable with where we are in the criminal justice system. Who was it? There was someone that was either on your podcast or someone else who was like, I can't even call it justice. I just have to talk about like criminal procedure because like there's just there, you know, justice is not. I'm interested in this work for a reason, but I also, again, we go to the polarities existing across like every single thing, every topic, every genre, everything feels like it's so polarized. And so I understand, you know, that's why I think it's so helpful to talk to people like Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott, who are working closely with law enforcement, but who have tremendously high moral standards and a lot of empathy and are really concerned about making sure that, you know, victims are taken care of and also that the right person is being arrested. And I don't know, I guess I'm just saying I can understand what it would feel like to be. I don't think it incentivizes people to get into law enforcement who are good people because they're like, well, everything I hear is the cops are the worst. And why would I want to expose myself to that? And you know what I mean? Like, it just, it's, it creates this kind of vacuum of like, well, then what are we doing?
Well, there's always, with everything, there's always these ebbs and flows of, we mentioned earlier about in a different topic in the pregame, but talking about like overcorrection and stuff. And I feel like things swing. There's a lot of movements where I see that, like, there's a movement to bring awareness to something. There's a movement to correct something, and I'm like fully on board with it. And then, you know, from whichever side, then it just goes, you know, like we need to be exposing corruption in the criminal justice system. We need to be aware of the fact that every, like Zach said, every conviction is not legitimate, and we need to be aware of that so that we can help correct it. And we need to, the public should know that there are corrupt police officers, there are corrupt prosecutors. These things exist in the world. But like when you take it to the point where that means all police officers and all prosecutors are bad, you know, that to me, that creates another troubling problem on the other side, like you were saying, Jay, because, you know, there, in order for justice to be served in a lot of these cases, you know, we are very victim centric on this podcast. You know, we work for the wrongfully convicted to free them. But, you know, primarily our concern is finding the person that actually, you know, murdered the five innocent people in our last season, and every case that we've done, you know, finding out who did kill Haman Lee and bring them to justice. Well, that requires, in order for that to happen, that requires like good cops and good prosecutors to actually go out and do their job. So like, I can't be in a position where I'm like, nope, they're, but then there's the, well, it's not just a bad apple, you know, the whole, it's just one bad apple thing. It's bigger than that. And I kind of agree with that too, but it's, you know, I think that we need to be striving for, you know, people to be doing their jobs right. And I can tell you, as going back to, you know, taking these classes, a large majority of the classes that I've taken over the last year are about ethics and morals and criminal justice. There's, you know, about why body-worn cameras are important and why open communication and transparency to the community are important. So like, these things, which I believe that, you know, shows like this and many of the shows that we highlight, especially during this season, I think that kind of public pressure is I think it's had an influence. I don't know. And actually, I do know, because for one of my assignments, I had to interview a couple of veteran officers and talk to them about the value of education, you know, whether you should, you know, go get your bachelor's degree in criminal justice to be a cop or just go straight to the academy. They both went through it, you know, 20 some years ago. And, you know, they talked a lot about how, like, it wasn't really valuable to them, the stuff they were covering. And we got into these like ethical discussions and stuff like that. And it wasn't really part of the program nearly as much as it is now. So hopefully things are getting better.
You know, I think when we hear from people like Jim Tranum, who have really devoted their second career of their lives to education, I was just thinking about it. I'm sure this exists and I'm sure it's come up possibly even in conversations that you've had with Jim. But, you know, you walk away really focusing on how broken the system feels that he has to go out and educate people. But it'd be nice to be able to hear from him, too, on like, the fact that I don't think he would keep doing it if he felt like it never had an effect. And it would be nice to hear from him, like, actually, I've seen a lot of positive results from this. And like, you know, I do feel like people like cops are accepting the idea of a forced confession or, you know, feeding details to a suspect and not realizing that you've done it. Like, people want to do better, or they don't realize that they are, you know, that they've sort of been corrupted by a corrupt system or what have you. That there are these positive effects happening through all this, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, this is not where I thought the discussion was going today, but I'm glad it went there, because it's interesting because I'm just thinking how, you know, what negative effects having that perspective has on our community as a whole. And look, it's the same thing that's happening with teachers right now. Like, there's a massive, massive shortage of teachers and substitute teachers, you know, that we deal with all the time. There's many schools that have, and it's the more people vilify, instead of the individual that's doing something wrong, but they vilify kind of the profession as a whole, the less people want to do it. And then you end up with kind of, you know, you're putting yourself at risk of ending up with like bottom of the barrel. You know, if everybody in the world is like, all cops are bad and F the police and, you know, I don't know why I said it like that. I was thinking of the song, you know, and anybody that is maybe of high moral character is like, I don't want to be involved in that. I don't want to go get into a profession where I'm going to be hated by everyone. I'm going to go do something else. Then, you know, you're more likely to end up with people in the profession that aren't the ones that you want there.
Yeah.
I don't know where the balance is, but there's got to be a balance somewhere.
Part of it too is a problem with society and the entitlement in society. That's a big problem, especially with teachers or the aspect I see is youth referees in any sport is they don't want to do it because these people have this crazy entitlement and want to go after them because they feel that they've been wronged when they don't want to look at the bigger picture. They don't want to step aside. They don't want to help, especially with teachers, right? It's, I'm not saying that there's not teachers that aren't causing a problem, but with my children, I'm not trying to make myself out to sound better, but I want to hear what the teacher has to say. I don't want to go at the teacher because my kid got in trouble, which you see that a lot. Your kid gets in trouble and you automatically go attack the teacher for their quote unquote wrongdoings without wanting to hear everything. And I think that's kind of society today.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I was also just, you know, in revisiting these episodes, another thing that came up with Dr. Amy was this, her study of wrongfully convicted people and the recidivism that can come out of being prisonized. I think that's a term that you guys were using, but the idea of, you know, you went in for something you didn't do, but by the time you get out, are you set up to be, you know, the best version of yourself? No. Are you set up to go re-enter the world and be able to recover? And like, you know, that the support that you do or don't get from community. And that actually takes us back to the support that the Exoneration Justice Clinic was talking about, right? Those are two parallels I really drew in my mind when I was listening to you and Amy talk about that in the past and thinking about Jimmy Gruhl and Kevin Murphy and Andrew Zimlick talking about Reggie Dillard and that, you know, part of the work that they're doing means that they don't just shake their client's hand and say, good job, you're out now, that they continue to show up for that person and take that very seriously. And so much of that comes from their experience of seeing this kind of stuff happen. I thought that was so inspiring, you know, and that's happening present day. And I was so impressed that Andrew got to argue part of the actual hearing. I was like, that is so cool. Like, they really believe in their students. He sounds like he's exceptional, but, you know, they're giving their students a real experience there.
Yeah. And hopefully, if you guys saw in that episode, there was in the description a link to the GoFundMe. I'd love to see the Truth and Justice Army really step up there. I put two links in the description. One was for Reggie Dillard's GoFundMe to help him transition. And then there was also a link in there for the clinic as well. But, you know, a big kind of immediate, and we saw this with Ed, you know, with Kenny Snow. Like, we've had a lot of people that we've had come out. You know, you got guys, you know, like Adnan walked into this huge support system. And he's doing great. Ed walked into a great support system. He's doing great. We've seen other times where it hasn't, you know, our George Powell, our season four case, you know, he had a lot of struggles when he came out. You know, we did provide some financial assistance to him too, but he didn't have necessarily the personal support system and had a lot of struggles when he come out. And I think, you know, I was lucky enough when Ed was released in 2018 to spend like the first 3 days he was out with him. I mean, pretty much at his house the whole time, other than at night when we were sleeping. And, you know, I got to see that, you know, how difficult it is after spending 20 years in prison, you know, whether you're a guilty person or an innocent person, either way, you spend that time in prison, you come out and then having to adjust to society. I remember, I think we talked about this in the podcast a little bit on Sunday, but, you know, taking him to get his driver's license, me and him and Kim went to the DMV and it was just such a wild experience. I still remember to this day, Ed, I remember him asking me if he can go to the bathroom while we were sitting there waiting in this huge DMV. And I was like, yeah, dude, go ahead. Like, why, you don't got to ask me. And then he got up and then he walked, instead of the straight line to the bathroom through the chairs, walked out to the wall and then walked along the wall, like this long kind of maze route over to the bathroom. And I asked him about it when he got back. And he was just like, I don't know, man. And he wasn't freaking out about it, but he was open enough about it that he's like, I had 20 years. Like, you don't walk in the middle of, you don't walk in a crowd. It's not safe. Like, you, when you go somewhere, you stay against a wall where you only got to protect one side of you all the time, you know? And it's, you know, that's a huge, you don't think about that. You know, we think about, oh, technology is different and their cell phones, there's all these things, but there's just things about the way that they live. You know, they're told when to eat, they're told when to get up, they're told what they can wear. They're you know, they're not allowed to make choices for all these years. And that, so that's part of the transition, having now, like, Ed had Kim and Kyra and Zachary there with him and a home to come into to help guide him through that process. But everybody doesn't have that. And it's just learning how to live again, learning how to start making choices again. And then there's the other element of it, which is one thing that, you know, I think desperately needs a change in the United States criminal justice system is our prisons. Like, I've always said that our prisons are supposed to be for rehabilitation, but that's not what happens in the United States, because there's a violence factor in there too. You know, they're put in a position where you have to defend. I think, you know, Ed was lucky. I mean, I think part of it was probably that he was, you know, he's a big guy. He was 6'7". And from what he told me, the fact that he was black and 6'7" actually was to his advantage, because there was such a high population. He was able to kind of just slide in with the crowd, where guys like Jesse Eldridge, who's a white guy, like he's like, he's had to fight his way through prison for over 25 years, because, you know, there's gangs, the gangs form, and you have to be a part of the white supremacist gang or whatever the different gangs are. And Jesse has always refused to be a part of any of that, which makes him a loner. And being a loner in prison is scary. And there's only the only way to survive it is to fight for your safety all the time. And then it takes somebody who maybe wasn't violent and makes them so they have to be violent to stay there. So there's just all these things that are broken. Then they come out and are like, you know, like the everybody that was on the podcast this weekend. It's like, you can't just turn and be like, okay, you're out, enjoy your life now. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not ready for that. They're not ready. You know, they don't know how to live. They don't know how to make choices. Not they don't know how, but it's been a long time since they've been able to or been required to. There's the money situation. There's the support network. And then there's the fact that the way you react to things, you know, like, I remember if you go back and listen to season 3, like, there's episodes where I talk to Jesse on the phone, and a couple times he would start to break down. Mm-hmm. You know, he just moved emotionally, and you could hear choking it back. And he was saying, like, he can't let anybody see him crying. Yeah. You can't let somebody see you get emotional in the prison, because it's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that reminds me of Chris Bynum too, you know, in the recent conversation that you mm-hmm. had with him, his experience of maybe needing to be more of a loner and, you know, protect himself in that way. Yeah. I mean, it's tough, and it's such a personal, like, you've had that one-on-one experience with Ed, and you've talked in, you know, more recent seasons about, like, having to be a little more careful yourself with how attached you get to folks that you stay working behind the scenes with and whatnot. But it's hard, because you have a big heart and you do get very emotionally involved, but then that kind of tears you down. Because it's so hard, it's hard to, like, dust yourself back off, you know, for the work you're doing and the light that you're shining on things, to be like, okay, I have to move to a new season now. Of course, I'm going to stay involved and I'm going to keep working. But that's one of the reasons I'm so grateful for these listeners who make these wonderful connections with people that we've featured on previous seasons, because I think they help. I think, if I may speak for you, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's a load off your heart a little bit to know that there are still people in the Truth and Justice Army that are able to be more involved on a daily basis to help carry some of that heaviness, you know?
Definitely. And over the years, I've, like, intentionally tried not to get as personally connected to the people we're working with, because it's just, I mean, that, like, Jesse in particular, Ed's, you know, Ed especially was the first case that we did, like, it, you know, in Sandy's case, like, it just breaks me. Like, the mental and emotional toll it takes for me to, like, get as close as I was with Ed and as close as I had gotten with Jesse, and, like, and then wait years and years and years for something to happen while trying to then still work on the next case and do the next thing. It makes it so that, yeah, it's more than a little. The fact that if one thing that we're able to do through the season of the podcast is for some of our listeners to write in, make connections. You know, I think of like Jody Hill. We have Teresa in the chat here. Like Teresa started writing to Jody, started talking to Jody. Now she goes and visits Jody. So like, if that's something we were able to do for Jody, that, okay, now we've moved on to the other case. I don't have constant communication with Jody anymore, but he has people. He has someone. They look forward to those, you know, those visits with Teresa, and they have someone for that. So when you guys do that and you step up, you know, I see Kathy
and Jen, Jennifer, you know, yeah. Jamie and Jesse.
Yeah, well, Jamie and Jesse. Yeah, we have people that just have made those connections, and it's a burden off my shoulder, because I know that even though we're moving on to the next case, that we've left people behind that are still standing in the gap there.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of personal, here you also re-aired the episode with Connie Walker, who really had this experience of kind of doing all of these different things at the CBC, getting all this mm-hmm. experience, doing this kind of television work where, you know, she's getting really good at kind of being able to make that separation between herself and a subject and news and kind of seeing how it all fits together. And ultimately, you know, she does some of the most personal work she's ever done with mm-hmm. this, like season two of Stolen, where she's confronting this horrible treatment of people in these Indian, so to speak, indigenous assimilation schools, and her own dad and the experience there. And then Brittany and Chelsea, who are, you know, confronted with things that happen in their own communities that they want to amplify and get the word out there. But they're having these incredibly personal conversations with victims' moms and other mm-hmm. family members. And, you know, it's heavy. It's really heavy stuff. I know that sounds very naive and it's an oversimplification, but that really hit home for me, too, when, you know, listening to some of those older episodes that you put out from True Crime Binge was just, you know, really, it all worked for me, I guess, in a way, to have all this cluster of these incredible women and then this incredible Exoneration Justice Clinic, and just feeling like we always say about, like, you have a sense when you listen to five episodes back to back and then think about the work that's being done on this podcast, you have a sense of like, this is so heavy, but you really feel all these different hands that are trying to kind of lift up these different parts of it so that not any one person has to carry it all, you know?
Yeah, it's really inspiring. And a lot of them, the episode that's going to be coming this Sunday is another case where there's a creator, you know, who's created a podcast and is doing important work investigating, but it's also very personal to her. This was another listener recommendation. I had several people request that I get Madison McGee from Ice Cold Case on. I just interviewed her today. That episode will air on Sunday. But listening to her, which there's almost 50 episodes altogether, so I haven't been through all of them, but listening to that process, it's such, you know, it's a lot, you know, speaking, you know, when you're talking about the, you know, season two of Stolen and all, like it helps me as a creator doing my job to like hear other people that are doing the work, like how are they navigating these things, particularly how are they navigating the, you know, the emotional toll that this stuff takes on them and the ethical situations that come up. You know, with Madison, we were talking about, if any of you have listened to it, that'd be a good one. If you want to start binging something this week, listen to Ice Cold Case, you know, where she like, you know, interviewed people, recorded them, and then later they're like, I don't want you to use that interview. I don't want to be on your podcast. I don't want to do it. And then like, these are like little ethical decisions like that. Like, what do you do now? Like, you have this stuff recorded. Super, it was super interesting work. But anyway, it just made me think of it when you're talking about how like personal, you know, some of these cases are to people. So we have people that are working on the legal side. The next week we have somebody who's investigating her own father's murder. There's just so much work to be done in this space. Like it feels like it's inspiring that people are doing it, and then discouraging too at some point. It's like, there's like, how can there be so many injustices that there's never enough voices to share them?
Yeah. And look, real quick, and Zach, please jump in anytime, because I know I'm just kind of pontificating here, but, and also shout out to, you know, there are a lot of people working in the media who are maybe not looking hard at wrongful conviction stuff, that are really fighting for victims and victims' families who feel also like they're not getting treated right by, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are also people on the other side who feel like, hey, you know who did this and you're not able to do anything, or you're not hearing me, you're not listening to me, you're not hearing my family. You know, there are a lot of victims' advocates. Sometimes there are things that, you know, there are laws and there are movements that seem to be at cross purposes with, you know, convictions versus prosecutions and getting people into prison and stuff. And I think, you know, we also, I just want to make sure people know that we also understand what it must feel like. I can't imagine, but can yet at the same time understand the frustration and the heartbreak of feeling like, you know, you lost someone important, you lost someone, and you're not seeing any justice done either. And how confusing it would be to be told that it was the right person, then finding out maybe it's not.
Oh, yeah, that's always
on top of everything else.
When I'm able to have the conversation, because a lot of times they won't even talk to you, but when, like, those conversations I try to always have with the victim's family members, it's like, I dread it, not because I'm worried about it. I'd almost rather have them tell me, F off, I don't care, like, they got the right guy. That's easier than the people that are, like, really considering it, like, I've convinced myself I had whatever closure means in this, and now you've, you know, because a lot of times we find that there's the victim's family, like, probably had some doubt originally, but then they kind of go, well, the prosecutors, they say they got the right person, the cops say they got the right person. In order for me to be okay, I need to believe that they got the right person, but they've got this lingering doubt, and then somebody comes up and says, hey, I've been investigating this, and I don't think they got the right person. It kind of confirms that suspicion they had, and then it just opens everything up all over again.
Yeah. Or, you know, somebody that's it's a righteous conviction, and they, because we want criminal justice reform, something happens and the person who did this thing gets paroled early and then they hurt someone else. I mean, that does happen. You know, it's that we also see that. We see victims' families who are like, how is this person walking around? And that would be mind-boggling also, you know?
That's the other side effect of bad policing and bad prosecuting, is sometimes it's they did have the right person, but they cheated to convict them. And because of that, they end up, you know, a guilty person ends up walking free.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot, everybody. Yeah. Everybody's trying to carry the weight.
Hey, everybody. Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining, if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
I will forward you some great suggestions for potential upcoming guests. I want to just shout out Sonia and Emmett. And I have something else from Emmett that I want to throw in at the end here as a possible call to action. Would love your input, Zach and Bob, on this from the Facebook page. But Alexis wondering about the next season, getting some good suggestions from people like Sonia and Emmett and others. But yeah, to jump into Alexis's, I imagine that you would tell us if you were hot on the heels of something that felt like it was the perfect next season. But
yeah, I haven't picked anything out yet. We're getting a lot of good case submissions both through the website. I mentioned that I went to the PO box and I'm getting, you know, the submissions through mail that I'm reviewing. I'm not even to a point yet where I have a clump of them where I want to send to, because we have like a volunteer team that is like vets cases for us sometimes when we have like a big long list of them. I'm just trying to be very, as I said, guys, at the beginning of this, I want to take my time with this. I want to make sure the next case is that, you know, air quotes, perfect case. And it's one where someone, you know, they don't have a lot of media exposure and they maybe don't have an attorney. The problem with the attorney, like, it's great if someone has an attorney, but as you've seen, as far as like making a production out of it, so you guys can engage and be involved in it, it gets very difficult because, you know, the attorneys are constantly, you know, and rightly so, putting brakes on things like, oh, you can't talk about this, can't talk about this. I always, in trying to be as ethical of a creator as I can be, you know, if I discover something that through my investigation that I think is meaningful to the case, I always run it through the attorneys first, which is pretty detrimental for me because almost if it's something significant, every time they're like, oh, don't talk about that. You know, right. So I just want to really make sure that we find, because I've had a lot of good cases that people have submitted, some I've seen before, but a lot of them, you know, they're being covered. You know, I saw this case on Dateline. Can you cover this one? I saw this on 2020. Can you cover it? You know, and it's like there's already, and then you look it up and there's a couple other podcasts that are doing it and it's been talked a lot on social media. That's a whole nother space now too, where people are, you know, they're not making podcasts, they're just doing everything on like Insta or even TikTok reels and stuff where they're putting out. So yeah, so I am, to answer the question, yes, I'm actively looking at other cases, but I don't have a handful that I'm like real, real confident in yet. But I did just get another pile of mail today and somebody sent me an entire case file that I need to read through or have Erica read through to see what that one's about. So yeah, we're looking, but we're waiting until we find one that I think where we can really, I just really want to, I've had this feeling that I feel like with Jody's case, we made an incredible impact on their case with the conviction integrity unit getting involved. I know the conversations that I had with them, I've had with the AG's office and the information I passed on to them, the affidavits we were able to obtain, the both we've talked about on air or not. I think that's going to have a significant impact with Chris's case. It's one of those for me as a, just not as a podcaster, but as like a human being who is like in this because I want to help. It was just one of those where I felt like we told the story, but I was never really able to, I didn't feel like I accomplished as much as I would have liked to. And that's kind of what triggered this. It's like, I want that case where it's like, okay, we can find it. We can find the evidence. No one else is looking. We can help you when no one else is helping you. We can find you an attorney. We can get you set up and get you on a road where your case without help is going to go nowhere, and we can provide that help. So it's just really, it's kind of important to me to find a case where we can do that.
The last thing I have is a note also from Emmett about something that is happening right now in Texas regarding books that are entering, or in this case, potentially not entering into prisons, because there is apparently some movement going on around like Texas legislature saying like, drugs are being brought into the system through books, and that we need to, there's a whole post about this that Emmett has listed. They've listed it on the Facebook page regarding like bookstores and volunteer groups that send books to inmates to be able to read. And now there's like a lot of controversy around that and like this push forward to make it much, much, much harder for inmates to get books. And that even the Texas legislature is acknowledging that actually the staff in Texas prisons is most likely the largest source of drugs in prison. Can you speak to that? Did you get a chance to check that out? And can you talk to us a little bit about it, or send people, is it okay to send people back to the Facebook page to check that out and help try to send the message?
Look for Emmett's post. We'll pin it because there's some details there about the things you can do. I did read about it, and it was, if I remember correctly, it was something like you're not able to send, I think you can't send used books anymore. And I don't know, maybe if anybody in the chat is aware of this, I think you can still, the best way that I always found when I send books to prisoners is you can send them directly from Amazon, because a lot of the prisons are really particular. Like, it's got to come from the manufacturer. It's got to be wrapped in certain packaging so that they know there's nothing in them. But yeah, go check out Emmett's post to see what can be done about it, because that's just another freedom taken away from these people. You know, again, innocent or guilty, like, this should be a place of rehabilitation. You know, taking away books, like, come on, like, let it be. And this whole idea that, like, the books are where the most clear cut statement on drugs coming into the prisons was something Ed said to me years and years ago when he was talking about they were on lockdown because there was all these drugs, and they were on lockdown again because all these drugs were in there, and there was all this was happening. And I was like, dude, I've been there to visit you. I know what the security's like. How the hell are the drugs getting in there? And he's like, well, y'all ain't bringing it in.
Hmm.
We're not bringing it in. How do you think it's getting in? There's one way for those drugs to get into that prison in that kind of volume, and it's through the guards. Mm-hmm. Like, right. 100%, that's where probably 99% of any, I'm sure somebody's able to smuggle in a little something here or there, some one way or another, but not anywhere near in the capacity that guards can smuggle stuff like that in. That's the problem they need to be addressing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, check out Emmett's post, everybody. They're making a push to campaign against this sort of blanket, like, you have to pre-register a book in order for it to get approved. Like, you have to give the title and the origin and stuff. And it's just reading to a lot of people more like book censorship than addressing a real problem. And I totally get that. So check that out.
Yeah. So make sure you go check that out. And I think with that, I know Janet's got somewhere she's got to be in about 4 minutes. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this thing up. So thanks everybody for joining us. Hopefully you guys, I'm seeing a lot in the chat. People enjoyed those kind of throwback episodes. A lot of people hadn't listened to them on True Crime Binge. So we're able to get a lot of that content out. And they'll be, when we have little scheduling glitches or if something pops to mind, I may just publish them again right now. We're able to just publish stuff kind of whenever we want to. So I might throw some more extra stuff out for you guys to listen to. Because it was cool for me to go back to and like listen to those conversations. Oh, last thing I want to do, Janet, you had mentioned earlier a lot. You're much more into the current true crime space than I am as far as like what's out there. Some of these creators, did I hear you mention, or am I putting you on the spot in a really bad way, have new shows and other stories that are out there that people could check out? Some of the people that we had on?
Well, the ones that, I mean, the direct appeal episodes, that those seasons, I think I was mentioning in the pre-show that the women in crime doctors have done are really interesting. I just had somehow not actually gotten around to listening to those yet. And so I'd started doing that after re-listening to the interviews that you did with Megan and Amy. And they're really interesting. I mean, it's very interesting and kind of an uncomfortable space, I think, for a lot of people who are very active in the kind of wrongful conviction space, because they aren't necessarily saying, like, we are 100% positive that these are, that in one case there was no crime, and in another case, that it wasn't the person who is in prison for it, but was it done correctly? Are there still questions to be asked? Was there reasonable doubt? But their perspective and their kind of educational bent is incredibly compelling. We've certainly talked about, you know, what Rabia and Colin are up to right now. We've talked about the latest season of Proof, which is fascinating and looking at many, many cases out of the same place in Michigan.
I was thinking of the... I mean, cut you off. I don't know. We're running
I'm just trying to think of what you might have been getting at. If there's something specific I brought up.
Doesn't Connie have another show?
What is Connie doing right now? That's a great question. I feel like I would know if there was something brand new.
Well, I mean, since that was put out, and apparently this did do exactly what I thought. It was just put you on the spot when you were
that's correct. Ready to,
but I thought that Connie Walker had another show. But anyway, we'll talk about that stuff more next week. Make sure you tune in this Sunday. Again, I have Madison McGee on for a great conversation. She's talking about her podcast called Ice Cold Case. It's a good one if you want to get started listening to it. It is, you know, she's an independent creator investigating her own father's unsolved murder case. So check that out. We'll talk about it again with you guys next week, and we'll talk to you then. See you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw.
Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kay Wood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @TruthJusticePod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.